It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland hanging along as well with Daniel Pryor. First new show, I guess, of the new year.
Happy New Year to you.
This is the time of year that we hear about the New Year's resolutions and making changes, and you kind of wanted to address that in the Daniel Pryor style
kind
this
of mode.
Week.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, New Year's, I think at this time, just like everybody else, there are things I want to give another shot. I've got an idea of some things that I absolutely want to try to complete this year. And, you know, in counseling, that's what counseling is about. It's about making change. Mm-hmm. People come in, they want to change their behaviors, they want to change their way of thinking. And it's kind of an uphill struggle, and I thought today we'd talk about kind of the mechanics of making change. I think for a lot of people that I talk to, it's just refreshing and encouraging for them to actually talk about what's actually going on when we are making changes in our lives. Mm. It's, you know, I've had a couple of situations recently where parents have been concerned, for example, about children playing too many games and, you know, the possibility of an addiction there. And then can we make behavioral changes? And so we've talked about, you know, what is actually involved when in that interaction between the mind and the brain, which is very interesting field and discussion. But I think a lot of times, and you know, we just take for granted that the if there's an addiction, it will be in my mind, the way I'm thinking. And forget, as we've talked before on shows on specifically on addiction, where the addiction is actually rooted strongly in the brain and the neural activity. And even though I think I might be able to make a change,
harder than you think.
Harder than you think. There's actually a process that has to be going on.
So, is there chemical reasons for then a lot of the habits we're involved in? Is, you know, I always think of as those are forms of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times that's definitely a New Year's resolution. People want to give up smoking or give up a certain kind of bad habit of some kind. Maybe they're abusing drugs. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not something quite so sinister as that. Maybe it's just want to get involved in exercise. Mm-hmm. Seems to be a real common one.
Well, whether it's breaking an addiction or whether it's forming a new behavior requires, you know, departing from an old behavior.
Right. So they're all kind of related.
They're all related. You know, of course, addiction is an extreme case.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some really high levels of neurological activity that in different kinds of addictions. Of course, you know, the drug addiction, alcohol addiction, that's something that you're ingesting. So that's got a direct chemical reality there. And then, but addiction to, like, for example, gambling or
is there some,
gaming
is there,
or something
Is there something
like that.
Chemical going on in being just lazy?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
There is.
Absolutely.
And a resistance to not particularly wanting to do exercise, for instance.
Even being lazy is a behavior.
Okay.
So every behavior has a neurological side to it. Let's back up a bit and talk about, let's just suppose you're listening, you want to make some change. And so I think the first thing that we, you know, want to address is like, the mechanics of change, the order of operations, I call it. We can change. Some changes, of course, take longer than others. I think it depends on how deep the ruts are in the behavior that we have that we desire to change. Or how deep the ruts are in, if you understand what I mean, for the listener, I'm thinking of the old wagon, the old cart that goes down a muddy road, and every time it goes down, the ruts get deeper. So it's hard to make these changes. So you can talk about how rigidly wired, neurologically wired a behavior is, or how deep the ruts are, you know.
What about, speaking of how long it takes to change, I've heard 30 days can get you on track. If you keep with something for 30 days, 60 or maybe 90 days. Is there such a thing as that? Some formula?
There is a reality there, certainly. And I'm not sure that there's a, I think it would be different for different things. And also, there are different, there are conditions for that. You could say changing a particular behavior would take 30 days. If the conditions are right, if I take myself out of the environment that encourages that particular behavior, that would be one thing. And also, you have to be on a different road. You can't just not do a thing. You've got to do something else
in order to replace that.
In order to speed that process up, because the brain is looking for a neurological balance. And if behavior A is what's bringing that balance, and I don't replace it with behavior B, then the brain is going to have a more difficult time, getting out of that. So, an order of operations. So, you want to make some change. Obviously, you've got to. Kind of first order of operations. We've talked about these before, but just a bit of a refresher. You have to have a direction, obviously. Where am I going? So you have to have a kind of a some sort of an idea of where you want to arrive at, whether it's weight loss. This should be realistic, doable, and then you kind of imagine, get an image, a mental image of where you're going to be when this change takes place, what it's going to look like. So you sort of have to have a kind of a true north or some sort of a bearing that you're heading toward. And then when you realize that heading where you're going, then you can ask yourself, okay, are my behaviors that I have now, is that actually going to get me there, or do I in fact have to make some changes? We might find when we set a goal that the track we're on will actually get us to that goal. So maybe I don't have to make change. But generally speaking, let's say, no, we've decided, yes, I have to make change. Well, then what specific changes do I have to make? So you can see why it's important to have an image out there, because that will tell me what specific changes.
Well,
I
when you
make.
Say also have an image, would it be okay then to maybe put a picture of yourself at a weight that you used to like yourself and put that on the fridge and look at that? Is that a practical thing to do?
Anything that can draw you. Now, this is why I say that it has to be realistic, is because if you put the goal out too far, you'll just sabotage. You won't get there. So it's got
to
be something.
People who want to get back to their high school weight or whatever might not be realistic.
Yeah, you've got to have, and then not everybody has the same amount of drive. So for some people can actually accomplish something like that. I'm overweight, out of shape, but I'm going to climb K2 this year or something. There may be a person on the earth who can pull that off, who has that kind of drive, but most of us don't have that kind of drive. So we've got to set the bar where we can actually get over it,
Small victories.
Small victories, and that kind of gives us a sense of, accomplishment. And then you find, that you get kind of pumped up and then you can do more. And then, of course, the fourth order of operation would be how am I going to make that change? How am I going to make that particular change? So where am I going? Do I need to change? What kind of changes do I need to make? And how am I going to make those changes? So all of those we're kind of addressing in our dialogue here, that making it realistic and then a plan, and a lot of times I find that you have to have a reminder. So you were talking about, putting a picture of yourself or your goal up. Certainly a picture or in some verbal representation of where I'm going. The old Hebrew custom of, putting it on my wrist, putting it on my forehead, over the door, so that everywhere you look in your life and in your environment, you get a reminder of where you're heading.
So that's not a gimmick. That really does serve a purpose. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to keep that every before your face, mm-hmm. A sticker on the steering wheel or the glove box or something in your wallet. I have a bookmarker that I like the bookmarker idea because I read before I read through the day or I read before I go to sleep. So I like to open the book and see a bookmarker there that is kind of a mission statement of where I'm going and why. That's
what about some of these behavioral changes? They'll do chemical things. I've even heard like, when you're feeling that bad thought, you snap a rubber band. What's going on with that kind of stuff?
It can be useful. I have other ways of doing that. What it does is there's another order of operation. It goes beliefs, emotions, behaviors, and that's almost like an automatic action reaction and cause and effect. And so, when we snap the rubber band on our wrist, or I have ways of saying, I'll ask myself, what are you afraid of? What are you ashamed of? Or I'll tell myself your world is getting too small. Or I'll tell myself, stop living to yourself, live to others, or something like that. I have a number of those that I'll say to myself. What it does is it just kind of pulls me out of that automatic action reaction of belief, emotion, behavior, And it puts me up kind of in a position of an analyst. Mm. And at that point, that is no longer an automatic action-reaction. I'm actually in control. What I'm actually doing is saying, when I snap the rubber band or I ask myself that question, what I've done is focus on a behavior, and I've said, don't do that behavior. Mm-hmm. Now, with that, immediately, that suggests an emotion to me. Just imagine yourself in a situation like that. There's a behavior, you're getting upset or in a situation or something, and you say to yourself, don't do that behavior. But then you're stuck with the emotion. Mm. And you say, well, I still have this feeling. Now you're going backwards. Behavior, emotion, belief. You say, okay, I've got to stop that feeling. Well, that immediately points me to, well, how can I stop that feeling? What, you know, and that's actually an address of the belief. And so, yeah, snapping the rubber band or asking myself a question.
Well, it kind of brings you back to reality. It's some kind of visceral, you know, a sensation that kind of wakes you up almost from the stupor of your normal behavior that's destructive.
And it's a way of correcting. Then I can, what I'm actually saying is I don't have to carry through on that behavior, but it does then put weight back on the emotion. Well, what am I going to do with the emotion? And then the question, do I have to have the emotion? And that takes me back to a belief. Mm-hmm. Beliefs are kind of ethereal things. And so let me talk a bit about beliefs. Belief in neurology, you know, every act is linked to a belief, quote unquote, a belief. Now, when we say belief, we don't necessarily mean a clearly held philosophical ideology. We don't necessarily mean that. There's a neurological aspect of belief, and that neurological aspect of belief drives emotion, and that emotion always drives behavior. Even something as simple as if we're talking here, Mark, you're talking and I'm listening, and I pick up a pen and twirl it around on my fingers, and then I lay it back down. There was actually a belief that drove an emotion that drove that behavior. Mm. Now, the belief, again, may have not been a clear, laid out philosophical thing. But it was in the neurology, it was very much the same thing. What was happening in the neurology was, as you were talking to me, there was a bit of a wave of in the neurological balance in my brain. It could have been because I was agreeing with what you said, could have been that I was disagreeing, could have been that I was anticipating a response to that, and so that caused a bit of a neurological rise in my brain then. And so that turns into an emotion, and that turns into that simple behavior.
Well, it turns into a body language, and then you say body language is a whole interesting study as well. Mm-hmm. Body language belies certain things that are going on behind the scenes and behind the eyes a little bit more than we realize sometimes.
To carry that a bit further, even the word belief means to believe or to live by, and so we're actually, our behaviors that are coming out are actually, that's another way of just affirming that behavior that's coming out is the representation of a certain belief. But again, the belief doesn't have to be philosophical, theological, or anything like that. It can just be represented in that kind of a rise or a shift in that neurological balance. So we have the mind and the brain, and the separation between the mind and the brain is a thing that we'll never get to. And the reason it will never actually get to where we can separate the mind and the brain is because in order for us, because we think cognitively and that cognition requires contrast. Mm. So we have to see like, you know, white page against a black blackboard. You can't see a white page against a whiteboard. So we, in order to experience things, there needs to be this kind of contrast. So we're talking about brain and mind. We always have to keep them separate in order to carry on this conversation. So let's maybe pick up there in a minute.
Yeah, that's a good place to have a little break here. Belief, emotion, behavior. We'll get into some of those subjects, too, as we continue on the subject of making changes here in the new year. And Sound Mind is the program you're listening to. Daniel Pryor, the expert. And he has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds, I assume, for the new year. Uh-huh. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel, if they need some help?
Right. Phone number is 425-778-6169. And I can also be contacted by email through the website BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Back with more of Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland along as well as we get into the second half of our show today, talking about making changes and kind of the neurology behind behavior and making changes.
Right.
Behavioral modification, as it's called sometimes. That's something you work with people on, whether they're got an addiction or a certain thing going on in their life, a behavior going on in their marriage that they want to change.
And the reason we're discussing the neurology is that just so that people know what they're up against, that it's, there's more to it than just making up my mind to do something and then setting off.
More than just willpower.
Yeah, as you were saying before, there's a certain number of repeats that have to take place in order to pull that off. So we were talking about the brain and mind separation because both of those are involved. When we think of belief, for example, every behavior is rooted in belief. When we think of belief, we think of something that we hold in our mind, like believing that Jesus is the Son of God, that kind of belief. But there's a belief in the brain part of our being too, which is purely neurological. And at some point, this mind and brain come together, they communicate, they talk to each other. But when we're trying to separate, well, how much is the brain and how much is the mind, where one stops and the other one starts is something that we will never be able to figure out, for simply because in order to even think of the brain, we have to keep it separate from the mind and vice versa. It's just it's a requirement of cognitive thinking. You're not going to be able to get around it. In quantum physics, they get down to the point where they just call it foam. Quantum foam, because the particle and the wave, they've taken it as far as they can. When is it a wave? But at some point when they're merging, you lose the experience of both of them, because our cognitive way of thinking requires some separation to identify them, and so it just turns into foam. And so we're sort of down into a mental foam here, or something where the brain and the mind are talking to one another, but it's impossible to really separate them. But you're up against some brain things as much as the mind thing. And so, roughly speaking, the mind sort of holds arranges and organizes a certain narrative, belief, using kind of bits of information that are retained in the brain as memory. And then the brain associates this narrative with a particular neurological balance. And that's either a pleasant neurological balance, involving like dopamine and oxytocin and serotonin, et cetera, or it's an unpleasant one that, has to do with epinephrine and serotonin and some others, and all things in between. So in order to change behavior, we're actually working against, we're trying to reset the brain. What you're trying to do is take one behavior that the brain has associated maybe with a pleasant neurological balance, and you're saying, okay, it's a pleasant neurological balance. Say, I like eating lots of Snickers through the day. That's a pleasant neurological balance, but it's not good for my body. So what I've got to do is I've got to retrain the brain to associate a pleasant neurological balance with another behavior, so that I've got to change the narrative, and I've got to teach the brain that Snicker bars are killing me.
Well, sounds like you're still saying, though, a lot of behavior is chemical.
It has a strong chemical part.
Understanding that is helpful, but still, we still got to do something. We got to change. We got to make some changes. I've heard change your thinking first and then the actions follow. Or I've come to think that actions really, it's sort of like act as if. I don't know if I believe this or not, but I'm going to start doing this certain thing and then my brain will follow. Is there any truth to that kind of?
When you say change your thinking and then the behavior will follow, it's kind of like just moving. It's like a cup and a pea thing, shill game, because your thinking is so attached to your behavior that maybe you start to prioritize thinking, maybe I'll change the way I think about this. But you really can't fully change the way you think without beginning to alter the behavior, kind of the same thing. So it's sort of hair splitting. But if it helps a person to think, I'm gonna change the way I think first before I think. You know, thinking is actually a behavior, so you're actually just using a just smaller steps. But if it helps to say I got to change my thinking first.
Well, like for instance, take the body and the mind will follow. I'm just going to get out of bed. I'm going to get up, and I don't feel like it, and I'm going to go to the gym. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like it. It's not what I think I particularly want to do, but I'm going to do it anyway. Isn't that kind of how some changes happen? After 30 days, and it really becomes a habit then, and you start to enjoy it.
What actually happens is you go back and forth, because there will be days when you'll say, boy, I really believe that if I get out of the bed, you know, today, even though it's bad, that I'm going to do some good for myself at the gym. There will be days like that, and there will be days like, I don't really care if it does any good for me. I don't want to get out of bed, but you just sort of kick yourself in the rear and you go do it. And so So one day you're using your thinking as a springboard, and the other day you're just doing it by force
of will.
Yeah, just white knuckling it through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think what you learn is that each one of those has a payoff, and then you sort of can have resolve to go each way.
Well, let's look at some of the practical applications, some of the main topics, areas people try to change. Changing social interactions.
Yeah, so you can see if you take what we've talked about, you can see the applications here. The way that you interact, your comfort level in social interactions, whether or not you are the person that kind of, when you get into a social situation, you sort of, recoil and stand in the corner, because there's a certain neurological balance that is more comfortable for you when you do that. And the thought of stepping out requires an uncomfortable neurological balance. So changing the narrative, which is kind of changing the way that you think, changing the narrative and saying stepping out, engaging with people is not a comfortable thing, but it's a way
of
growing.
But forcing yourself to do that, so you maybe not such a wallflower.
You know, part of the narrative might be that everybody's a little bit uncomfortable, and then just some people are handling it differently. And I'll take steps outward. I'll learn to have a plan. You see, we go back to the order of operations. What's my goal? What change is needed? How do I make that change? So I might even make a plan. And I've done this actually in social settings. Say, I'm going to be the one to step forward and say, "Hello, my name is Daniel Pryor. How are you?"
Yeah, you want to have more friends. I mean, the Bible even says that too. If you want to have friends, show yourself friendly.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that's a proactive thing. Yeah. You're begrudging that you don't have any friends. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes you. Nobody cares about me. But a lot of times doing the opposite, going out and caring about somebody else will bring those good things towards you too.
There can be a change in neurological. So eating habits, of course, those would be the same. Again, you know that you can see once again that neurological balance that is associated with good food, and you have to change somewhat your narrative and teach the brain to associate that pleasant neurological balance with another behavior. That's where this repeating the behavior until you kind of wire in that neurological balance in terms of, just in layman's terms, wiring in that neurological balance with a different behavior and different narrative.
Mm-hmm. Study habits you have on here, exercise habits.
Study habits, exercise habits.
I would think when it gets into some of these last couple here, you got negative thinking and then the most entrenched kinds of behaviors that we try and change, the addictions and anger issues. Those are a little bit more deeply rooted things that are harder to pull out.
And it gets back to the question of how am I actually going to make these changes? And so some of that incorporates support groups. Some of that incorporates...
So that is a necessary part of that.
Yeah, you have to pull the components together.
Yeah.
You certainly have to have a plan.
You can't change some of those more deep things by yourself.
No, some of those addictions do require inpatient treatment, you know, to get you to a certain place. So it's that first order of operations, you know, where am I going? Do I need to change? What change do I need? And how will I bring that change about? That is, we have to always remember that you've got to eventually come to, you know, a specific direction, a specific plan, and that can involve different things. Support from family members, sometimes in severe cases, an inpatient situation, counseling, accountability, a church group, lots of different things to put together a plan that's going to give you the best shot at making that change to help you change the narrative and have pleasure in the change process so that you so that you're actually associating that pleasant neurological balance with a positive behavior instead of the negative behavior.
Well, it's great information, and obviously you're a big believer in one of these components, which is counseling and life coaching. That's kind of your that's kind of your business. And if people want to make some changes, maybe they feel like they are facing something they're not going to change on their own. They need some help. How do they get in touch with you?
Yes, again, the phone number is 425-778-6169. 425-778-6169. Also, can email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
And you also have some of your articles on that other website, too.
There are articles at ChristianCounselorsForum.com on lots of different counseling topics and issues. And also, these shows are broadcast or podcasted, excuse me,
on the
BibleBasedCounselors.com.
So you can always hear these shows on BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Lots of stuff there. Yeah.
Lots of stuff there. Always great stuff. Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.